news, information, opinions, history, and most importantly, always real. This is Rant EM Radio.
Refer to the prophecy of the one who will bring balance to the Force. You believe it's this boy?
He can see things before they happen.
He can help you.
The Force is unusually strong with him.
He was meant to help you.
Anakin! Tell him to take off!
Will I ever see you again?
What does your heart tell you?
Are you sure about this? Trusting our fate to a boy we hardly know?
Anakin Skywalker, meet Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I sense much fear in you.
The boy is dangerous. They all sense it. Why can't you?
Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
Greetings and salutations and all other happy horse shit. Welcome to Star Wars, a retrospective to a galaxy far, far, far away. I'm your host, Phil Rea. Joining me tonight is...
Lou Rodriguez.
Yes, yes. Well, so here's how this is going down. This is a exclusive, series of podcasts leading up to the new Episode 7, The Force Awakens, exclusively for RantEMRadio.com. In conjunction with our pals over at Geeks of the Industry, who's going to be playing clips of each and every one of our recordings, so they're doing a big thing too. And this is something special. I've been talking about this for months, especially with Lou, because every time Lou and I get together, no matter what we're talking about, if it's drywall, right? If it's his sister-in-law's dip, it always comes back to Star Wars, so... I was in cahoots with the Rant guys. I said, let's do this. And it's going to be, as my wife is texting me, and it's going to be a series that pretty much breaks down every movie, episodes 1 through 6, up until, the release of Episode 7, which is The Force Awakens. There's so much to take in. Lou and I are going to give our... perspectives and just some tidbits about the movies and how we felt about certain characters and all this other happy stuff. And then we'll just, eventually get some more people on via Skype or in studio just to get a feel of it, because we have a lot of friends and family who love Star Wars just as much as we do. So
it's a huge universe.
It is a huge universe. It's a lot to take in.
It really is.
I don't think we're going to get, what's going to happen is after we record each one, you're going to be like, oh, I forgot to mention... It's going to happen. It's same thing with any kind of, with this genre. Star Wars was such a staple in my life that, and the effect it had on pop culture, I think, is so profound, I think it set the tone for everything else that was cool in terms of science fiction and fantasy. Is that fair to say?
And it changed movies totally forever. It just the way they made the movies, the way they came about the movies, knowing that there's a new whole new genre out there for everybody. You know, Jaws was the first big blockbuster, but Star Wars was the one where people went crazy for it.
Yeah, and you know, it's for me anyway. It just was something totally different. You know, I mean, when we were kids, we were like 70s and 80s kids. So we had like Buck Rogers and fucking Battlestar Galactica. And,
oh, yeah.
But when Star Wars came to fruition, it was like, whoa.
Well, they were also copying off of Star Wars. Because Battlestar was a total ripoff of Star Wars. And they were trying to cash in on that whole thing.
I think the whole concept, too, is...
And Buck Rogers was actually influenced.
Was influenced... a college-going George Lucas. And we'll talk about Lucas in length because he's the guru. You know, he's the guy. He's the HNIC, I guess you could say. The funny thing is when in 1997, when they released that episode one was coming out and the prequels were in effect. Now, again, this is 97... The internet was still slow.
Yeah.
You know, and whatever, it was like either Variety Magazine or your local newspaper or AOL or something, but it was like the world stood still. It stopped.
Yeah, it definitely did. But it all started, like, I think in 91 when Lucas released the rights for everybody to start writing new stuff. And it was due to the role-playing game that they started creating this universe, you know, beyond Return of the Jedi and all that.
Right. And go ahead.
Oh, and then Timothy Zahn did the Thrawn trilogy.
I was about to get into that.
Yeah, which was amazing. And that's what got me into a Star Wars fan. I mean, I've loved Star Wars all my life, but that trilogy was just freaking amazing.
Now, you mentioned the game. I played a version of the game because I was a DC Heroes kid growing up. And I played a little bit of D&D. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, me too.
But DC Heroes was my game, you know? And we incorporated the Star Wars universe into DC Heroes rules. But around that time, I was like, 3 years removed from high school at this point, we got heavily into the whole genre again, and then reading the Zahn books. And
the Dark Horse comics.
Dark Horse. See, that's the thing. You're going to have to get my eyes. I didn't read the Dark Horse comics.
Oh, yeah. Add to the, Dark Horce Rise. No, it wasn't Dark Horce Rise. What was it? Dark Empire.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No. I know the books. I just never read them.
Dark Empire 1 and 2.
Right. So you're gonna have to be my eyes and ears on that.
Yeah. And George Lucas said that, you know what, this is gonna be part of the universe because he had no interest in doing the prequels at all. And once everybody started getting into it again, he was like, you know what, looks like there might be some money made. And then he finally felt that the technology was there to do the movies that he wanted to do.
Right. So apparently when developing this. I didn't know he had like this divorce settlement.
Yes, I was thinking about that.
You want to talk about that for a second?
Yeah, sure. I mean,
he lost most of his fortune in a divorce settlement back in like 87, and like Lou mentions, has no desire to return to Star Wars. He unofficially canceled the sequel trilogy by the time of the release of Jedi.
Yeah.
And then Lou mentioned the resurgence of the popularity in the wake of the Dark Horse comic line and the Zahn novels. Lucas obviously woke the fuck up and was like, oh, there's a big enough audience for this. You know, let's do it, you know? And then it was announced where I read it in a doctor's office in Variety Magazine that the prequels were coming out. And I was like, this is insane.
Yeah, definitely.
So he started writing, I believe, in like 94. So
well, he had bits and pieces from his original
from the original draft. Script, right?
Yeah,
okay,
from the original draft.
Okay,
yeah, because he had fleshed out the characters a lot when he did the original Star Wars trilogy,
right?
So he had wrote a lot of backstory that he never put into the movies. So he started like pulling out from pieces from there, which they actually have a comic out now called the Star Wars, which is based on his original script,
right?
Which incorporates some of the stuff that he put into the prequels.
Is it safe to say that? That Lucas, even though, because he's obviously when he wrote the original Star Wars, a lot of it was vast. I mean, I got a book right in front of us that there's half the universe is in this book. I have no fucking clue who these people are. Because, again, I didn't read every single thing that was a part of the extended universe.
Yeah, I was big into that.
Right.
What really got me into it was there was a card game, a customizable card game like Magic.
Like Magic, okay.
Yeah, it was just like that. And me and my friends got into it, and, man, we spent a crap load of money on that.
Yeah.
And but literally, you know, each card would have a character or a vehicle, and you would play them all the time. After a while, you started getting used to it, where we'd watch the movies and be like, oh, that's this guy. Oh, that's that guy. Oh, you know who that guy is? Oh, you know what that vehicle is? Or you know what that model number is? So from there, that's when it started becoming this obsession of Star Wars. And then that's when I started going crazy with it.
All right. So here we are. It's episode one, The Phantom Menace. Now, I like I said, I was stoked. And a bunch of my buddies, too, we were all just like waiting. Like, we had a countdown on my friend's refrigerator.
Oh, that's great.
You know?
Such a great, we're just bought, waiting for that moment.
Bought the tickets, did the whole midnight thing. Like, you yeah. and I talked about yeah. last week how we're going to be doing that for seven. It was like just a breath of fresh air. Like, this is great. This is coming.
It was the most unrealistic thing to me that was happening. I just couldn't believe it was actually going to sit here and watch a Star Wars movie. It was just so crazy that after all these years, we were finally getting one.
So the original screenplay was adapted from Lucas's outline that he wrote back in 76, like you mentioned, right? And, you know, it helped him keep track of all the storylines and the characters. Like I said, it's a vast, vast universe that you're fitting, trying to incorporate everything into a two-hour movie is always hard, no matter what genre it is, you know. But you know, now we're paying $14 for a movie. I better get a two and a half hour movie out of it. I'm going to take a hostage. No, seriously. I mean,
no, it's true. It's, true,
it's
yeah.
not. It's not fair. I mean, you know, it's but you know, you get what you pay for. So, let's talk about it was released. It was released in '99.
Yeah, right. May '99.
Yeah, it was released. It was my release date. There it is. May 19th, 1999. It was produced by Rick McCallum, of course, directed and written by George Lucas. John Williams, again, wrote the score, right?
Score is amazing.
Score is amazing.
Love that score.
We'll actually end the show with one of the songs from the score. So it was distributed by 20th Century Fox. Right in pre-production, I want to talk about the 20th Century Fox and why it won't be in the newer movies.
Yeah, well, since Disney took it over now, they changed it. Actually, you can look on the net, and you can actually find the actual new logo, and it's just missing that kind of like, you know, when you're sitting in the movie theater, you hear that, dun, 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 and then wait for that pause, and then, boom! It's like the Star Wars music starts.
There's nothing, right?
It's just, yeah, now it's just, yeah, it's totally different.
The movie ran 133 minutes. It was a $115 million budget. It grossed over $1 billion. But that was because of the 3D movies.
Yes. Originally, it made $64 million on the weekend, opening weekend, and it made $474 million domestically.
It's still the fifth highest grossing film in North America.
It's and actually, out of the trilogy, the prequels, it made the most money, which is also the most maligned, which is we could talk about that later, about how everybody didn't like this one the most.
Right.
But yet it made the most money. What do you
No. Here's it. We watched it again, the family and I, and it was brought out to me again, like it was brought out to me 15 years ago, that for a casual fan, like my wife and my other friend were like, you know, it's too much CGI in this movie. And I was like, what do you mean too much? You know, she's like, well, you know, look at this part, look at that part. And we'll get into the parts in a little while, but you know, it was like, well, you know, and I was trying to defend it.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me.
No, you know what? It doesn't bother me, and it's so much, you know, everybody knows I do a wrestling podcast. I don't care so much about the background if you tell me a good story. You know how I am with that.
Exactly.
Just tell me a good story. Tell me a good story, and I'll put that to the side.
Exactly.
So, but I see where people are coming from.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely flaws in the movie. I still think it's really, really good, and I still consider one of the best. I think that's one of the things when we first started talking, I said, you know, I'm one of the few people that actually really like Phantom Menace, and you were like, I do too. And I was like, want to be best friends?
Yeah. You want to be my BFF?
I was Like, I think we're the only two people in the world.
I liked it because of the story.
Yes.
It put a lot of things in perspective for me. I didn't agree with a lot of the characters. I didn't agree with some of the nonsense that went on. We'll talk about that in a little while. But, you know, it got a lot of mixed reviews.
Yeah.
You know? Siskel and Ebert, like, praised it because they were old at that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they see something big and shiny with you know, lasers and shit, they lose their mind, those two guys. But they were still, at that point, an authority on giving you their shtick every Saturday night on Channel 11 locally here, you know? So...
Funny too, because you know who really I find that likes the movies a lot is the I guess they're the millennials they call them now the degeneration.
I guess yeah.
Yeah, but a lot of these young kids that are like you know they were like you know, 9 or 10 when Phantom Menace came out, they consider it better than the original trilogy, which you know can't like you know. But just thinking that like that's what they grew up on, and for them to be like you know loving that, I think that's pretty awesome too because it's like they grew it there. They have their own generation, Star Wars.
Yeah, only because of the trilogy of the prequels.
Yeah, and some of them hadn't even seen the original until after the prequel. I talk to them. I'm like, I look in amazement. Like, really? They make your kind?
I don't hate it. I don't hate them. I should say. I just think that they need to re-educate themselves and watch. And watch the original three and set it off.
The ones I talked to, they did watch it afterwards, finally. But I mean, when they said they were really into it, it took them a while before they actually finally got into it. I just think that's a really interesting fact that, you know, they would wait so long. And then when I was in the Army and I saw the original, A New Hope, when they re-released it, I saw it a bunch of kids and they were like, wow, this was kind of cheesy. I'm like, what, are you crazy? I was like, do you know what you're watching?
So, when it opens up, like every Star Wars movie opened up, it tells you the plot of the movie. And this was the plot. So, in response to taxation to trade routes in the Galactic Republic, the Trade Federation organizes a blockade of battleships around the planet Naboo. All right? The Supreme Chancellor of Alram dispatches Jedi Master Qui-Gon Jinn and his apprentice Obi-Wan to negotiate the Trade Federation leadership to end the blockade. Darth Sidious is a Sith Lord, and the Trade Federation secret advisor orders the Federation Viceroy, Nu Gunray, to kill the Jedi and invade the Naboo with an army of battle droids. So let's talk about the opening of the movie, which what I just described. Here's the thing. Right away I knew, like it gave it away almost. The whole interaction with the Trade Federation guys and Darth Sidious, like right away. I thought.
Oh yeah. Oh, I knew. Yeah, I totally knew it was.
So, tell me your initial thoughts of the opening with these characters. It's especially the fucking the Viceroy and. The Asian
the act. Asian
like
that is yeah, people were very upset about that, about the Asian. I think he said it was like Taiwanese or something like that.
Yeah,
like, I that or something like
I guess. I mean, I don't know, but.
Yeah, I mean first of all, those are the first creatures that you see, and they're not CGI. Think about right. that too. So right off the bat, you're like, "All right, I'm getting my Star Wars. This is what I'm used to." You know, but besides their mouths moving a little weird and everything, I didn't even catch the Asian thing until about maybe halfway through the movie when I saw them again.
Saw the movie on Cross Bay Boulevard in Queens, which is not even there anymore. The theater over there, the UA, it's a fucking Modell's now, and got the midnight show. And when this scene came on. Like, everybody I was with just gave me, like, the Parker Lewis, whoosh, and looked at me like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? Like, is he from, did he just deliver our dinner? Like, is that the kind of, like, is that the guy that delivered our dinner before? And I was like, I don't know. But do you want to go into, you want to do the character thing as we go along, or you want to go along?
The characters with Nuke Gunray and Ruin Hakko. and they weren't really interesting or anything. They were just kind of like pieces of a little puzzle that thing. I think what was really great was the whole Jedi thing, and you know the whole interaction between him and Obi-Wan with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, which is in the opening, and you know, right away you see that he's training this, you know, young Obi-Wan Kenobi, and he's giving him advice already off the bat.
Liam Neeson does a really good job in anything he does. Like, he does, like, 17 Taken movies. Like, it's the same plot, but, you know, he gets somebody... one of his family members gets robbed, and it doesn't matter how... He do seven of them, and it's all fun because he's a good... He's a pretty good actor. I liked his character a lot.
Yeah.
I thought Qui-Gon was the... He wasn't the traditional Jedi. Constantly questioned authority.
Yep.
He constantly was conflicted with every single thing he learned. Even though he had an apprentice, and they gave him an apprentice, probably against policy. I bet you there's a fucking Jedi policy in their bathroom. Like, don't do this, don't give this guy this, and, you know. Right. But it was great, because, like, I totally got him the first 10 minutes of that movie. Yeah. It was like he hooked me.
The whole between him and Obi-Wan, Ewan McGregor too, was amazing. I think I did just you got it right off the bat that okay, this guy's teaching this guy, and you felt the authority from Qui-Gon. You know what I mean? And also he has that whole samurai kind of look, you know, with the ponytail in the back and everything, the whole kind of like Japanese thing. I thought that was really cool too. I noticed that from the first time.
I want to know why all the human-looking Jedis got that samurai look, and they didn't give it to Skywalker in the original movies.
That's a good question.
Like, you know, everybody got the spiked hair and a rat tail. We call it a rat's tail in New York, but a little ponytail in the back there. Like, but I get where you're coming from, that whole samurai thing, and that's where Lucas got the idea.
From the original, yeah, Hidden Fortress,
right. And he watched a bunch of kung fu movies and stuff, so he was all inspired by that, which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah, I think it was Akira Kurosawa. I think that was the name, The Hidden Fortress. Mm-hmm. If you watch that movie, it's pretty much...
I didn't see the movie, but I can pretty much, you know, figure out that was where he got the idea from and ripped it off, but...
Well, he was inspired.
He appropriated it. All right, we'll use that word. He didn't steal it. He appropriated it. Yeah, it's the same shit.
Yeah, but back to that opening scene. The first scene when, you know, the gas goes off, and boom, they hit the original Star Wars soundtrack, the Star Wars theme. I lost it. I was like, I was so happy. I was just like, you know, they're pulling out the lightsabers, and boom, the music starts. And I was like, I'm so great.
I was telling the little guy about the music. He's like, I was playing him the Duel of the Fates, and he goes, "Did they record those people live when they're doing the film in the movie?" I'm like, "Well, no. What they'll do is they'll take the orchestra, which John Williams has, and it's a symphony, and they'll play the movie screen behind them to inspire them to write the music. So they get to see the movie before everybody else does.
Yeah,
which is pretty cool." So he wanted to know who was singing the song. Like, oh, no, like, it's a choir, dude. Same thing we do at church, except they're cooler. They do it a lot better than the Jerry actors at my church, you know. But and I was very, very, I got sucked in right away. Like you said, I was just taken in by the scene, and then the battle droids are awesome.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. The big ones, the small ones, I was hooked. I love the battle droids.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely love
them.
That
was so cool.
So now the Jedi flee to Naboo, where Qui-Gon saves...
And here it is.
He saves a Gungan character by the name of Jar Jar Binks. Now, if you haven't seen the movie, Gungans are... they have elongated fucking heads with dangling flappy ears, and they live underwater. Right, and they have like they're like, I don't know, how would you, if you haven't seen this movie, you shouldn't be listening to this podcast. But how would you describe Jar Jar Binks to our audience who's never seen a Star Wars movie before?
Oh man, that's a nervous. Well, I wouldn't even go into details about what he looks like. It was just, look, he's the comic character. He's the people that the character people most hate easily.
Right.
I don't know. That's a good question. How would you describe that to someone? Like you said, long flappy ears, big long snout, big eyes that stick out, protrude from his head.
Yeah.
All right. Let's just say, let's very Jamaican in his
accent.
Well,
let's can we play a clip of Jar Jar and all right. Maybe not. Here we go.
Hey, wait! Oh, Mooey, Mooey, I love you.
You almost got us killed. Are you brainless?
I speak.
The ability to speak does not make you intelligent. Now get out of here.
No, no, Mrs. Stay. Missy called Jar Jar Binks. Missy, your humble servant.
That won't be necessary.
Oh, but it is. It is demanded by the gods, it is.
Right. So now there's a West Indian reptile that lives on this planet underwater. Is that what you're telling me? Yeah, is that what you're telling me?
Pretty much, pretty much.
Okay. All right.
Before we get back into Jar Jar, I just wanted to explain Naboo real quick.
Yeah, explain. Go ahead.
Naboo, when I first saw that, my jaw dropped.
You mean the planet itself?
The planet itself. When they first landed there.
The ship is amazing. That fucking cruiser they have?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I love that ship.
But when they got there, it was like, we're seeing a new planet in Star Wars universe. You know what I mean? So it was just between the underwater world and all that stuff, and the Theed, the city where Queen Amidala lives. I just thought that they killed it. The whole atmosphere was something totally different we've never seen before in Star Wars.
They filmed part of that in England, and a lot of it was CGI, but the castle itself was spots in England, like the countryside. So
and also Italy too. Oh no, that was for there was one scene or whatever that was in a cathedral or something in Italy.
Yeah, let's look at that. You know what? I have that here. Hold on.
Yeah, it was.
The forest scenes in Naboo were filmed in Castlebury Park in Watford, Hertfordshire, in England. And then the Tunisian desert was for Tatooine, in the city of Tozier, and the Italian. Was it the Italian Caserta Palace was used for the interior of the Theed City?
Yeah,
when they did the whole escape and had to come back and do the
And that's what Queen Amidala was. And,
yeah,
that was. I mean, just the whole Naboo to me was just. I was totally taken back. I was like, wow, this is not Tatooine. This is not Endor. This is not Hoth. This is like a living, breathing planet with a lot of civilization, and two different races too, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, and two different races that. Are like super separate.
Yes.
Like the whole underwater thing. It sort of reminds me of we're comic book guys. Sort of reminds me of like that Namor or Aquaman with Atlantis. Yeah. Like that kind of thing. Like, like they're there, but they're not there.
Yeah.
You know? So. All
right. So we go back to Jar Jar.
All right.
Now, I am a fan.
I'm not. But I see where his character is justified. Because of who he is and where he's from and how they turn out and unite to defend the planet against the trade ferries. You know, you know what I'm saying? Like it's so my initial reaction was, you have to be kidding me. Like you have to be kidding me. And I probably said that I know I said it out loud. You have to be kidding me.
I understand totally the hate. I definitely think they should have toned him down with the comedy. Lucas was definitely went way above with the whole cartoonish thing. And especially the fact that you're looking at a CGI character doesn't help the fact that, okay, now I feel like I'm watching Roger Rabbit or something like that.
Yeah.
But it didn't bother me. It wasn't enough to bother me from hating the movie. You know what I mean? Like some people will blame the whole movie.
No, You know what? Here's the thing too. And this is for fanboys and fangirls, and we're guilty of this. We nitpick everything.
Yes.
Because, your expectations of something are so high that if you don't get that gratification from seeing something else of the same person, from the same director, the same movie, the same series, it's like, what the fuck? It's like when your favorite band like does another kind of music. You know, like if you're a Metallica fan and they like, and when that Black album came out, I thought all the Woodies in the local park in my neighborhood were going to kill themselves. This sucks, man. What the fuck? You know, like, I hate this crap. That's exactly what we got when people saw Jar Jar Binks.
And you got to admit, too, when this movie came out, the expectation was through the roof.
Well, everybody, the last movie was 83, so it's exactly. 16 years.
To have a fan base built up for that long. That's like,
CGI started in the 70s, if I'm not mistaken. Right?
It's possible.
It was Wasteland. Yeah. There was a few movies. Yul Brynner, like that futuristic movie where he's a cowboy.
Westworld.
Westworld.
I don't know if there was too much. It was more. They did a lot of cartoon
spots.
Like they would actually draw the actual things. Like Tron.
Yeah.
Remember Tron?
Right, yeah.
That was actually drawn. That was actually cartoons.
Yeah.
And it also just sets and everything. But,
so you're a film guy, so you know, like, I'm not a film person, but I know that CGI at this point in the 90s was like the thing.
It was new, yeah, it was totally new.
Like totally new, and like the computers were new, and like Titanic.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck? You know, you're blown away. That's how it was for me seeing this.
Definitely.
Not Jar Jar Binks, but that's the reaction, like seeing Naboo and the cruiser and like that insane.
Remember that same year too, the Matrix came out.
Yes.
So,
beating
the head with that.
You're like, this is profound. Like, I didn't get a grip on Matrix until I watched it again, like when I bought it on videotape.
Same thing with me, yeah.
I didn't dislike it. I was like, yeah, this is like, you know, this is special, you know? So, and Lucas just took that and like multiplied it by a million, you know.
It's funny. I'm watching the making of it of the Phantom Menace today, and you know, he's got storyboards, literally hundreds of different shots, and he's got two markers. I think it was like a yellow, pink, and blue, or something like that. And he's just filling in the characters, going, "This is real CGI, real CGI, real CGI." And the production designer is looking at him like, "What the fuck are you doing? Are you crazy?" And he was making everything. And if you know, the everything above their head and up was CGI. They only built sets up to their head, which Liam Neeson is tall. So they actually cost them a couple of extra thousand, a couple of hundred thousand.
Yeah.
Just to make the sets to fit his head. So that's crazy. Nobody's ever done anything like that.
Be that guy sitting next to Lucas, dude. And him with the marker and like saying to yourself, "This guy's a fucking wag job." Yeah. How am I going to do this?
Exactly.
Here's this guy's vision. Like, he sees this before everything else.
Yes.
You know, that's the perspective. You're like, holy shit, you know? All right. So, getting back to Jar Jar real quick, again, I didn't like the character. It wasn't going to stop me from not liking the rest of the movie. Like, I know people are like, "Oh, once I saw that, I knew the movie was a wrap." Like, because you're an idiot.
Yeah.
You know? So, Qui-Gon saves Jar Jar from being killed. He's indebted to the Jedi, leads them to the underwater Gungan city that Lou spoke of before. And then where the Jedi failed to persuade the Gungan leader, who is Boss Nass.
Boss Nass.
So, Boss Nass is...
played by the great Brian Blessed.
Yes.
You remember Flash Gordon.
Yes.
Voltan.
Yeah. Now, didn't he... He got that part because of something else, right?
He was trying to go for the governor.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
He wanted to play CEO Bubble or Booble or whatever. And
Yeah,
he wound up getting that part because he was too loud and brash. And if you've seen Flash Gordon, you know exactly who the character is. I mean, he's just loud. Flash Gordon's alive! That's the best. I love it.
I love Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
That's a good...
They're doing a remake of it, too.
Are they really?
Matthew Vaughn, though. The guy who did Kick-Ass and Kingsman, which is an excellent movie, and X-Men First Class, which is still the best.
Yeah, I love X-Men First Class.
I think that's still the best
Great movie.
Yeah. So it should be interesting with him behind the...
Dude, I'll be happy if they let Brian May from Queen do the score, though. I know Freddie's not around anymore, but I love that. That soundtrack's on my fucking iPod.
It's great.
We're going to do a podcast about Flash Gordon.
I would love that.
All right. Well, let's get back to Phantom Menace. All right, so he fails to, because now apparently Jar Jar was exiled from the fucking his from his whole from his he was exiled from Gungan because I don't know what they didn't even mention what he did.
If they did, but I don't even remember.
You used to in big doo doo. He says coming back. But they all talk like fucking Fat Albert's friends.
Mushmouth.
It's my race. You know the bell. Lou knows the bell. Lou's heard the bell already on a different show.
Speaking of which, what do you think of the Gungans in general now? Is it just the Jar Jar that you didn't like, the character, or is it the whole race?
I didn't like Jar Jar.
Okay, so the race you were able to...
But... The dialect bothers me. I think it's like over the top, like fucking... Little Rascals racist. You know what I'm saying? Like, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does a little bit. Don't get me wrong.
I'm not one of these bleeding heart liberals. I'm not. But like, oh, look a here. Wada doodle. You know, Misa like that.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
fucking, that's like mammy type shit, man. I don't know.
You know, it's an alien race. You know, I can't defend it, but it didn't bother me.
You could defend it.
Yeah, it's another universe. So what? All right, you know what they happen to sound like? You know,
they happen to sound West like Indian, yeah,
like you said,
like,
West Indian.
Yeah, whatever it is, like it sounds like fucking like an Al Jolson act. You know, it's like mammy, Misa, love you, mammy. You know, but I like, once the story progresses and the importance of the Gungan. To the Naboo and vice versa, you know?
It does come, everything comes together. Yeah, I mean,
right.
Nothing was wasted.
So, you know, they want Boss Nass to help them and, you know, to help the people of Naboo to obtain transportation to Theed, which is the capital city on the surface. And there they rescue Queen Amidala, played by Natalie Portman. And we'll do the whole casting in a few minutes, I liked the character. But the problem I had was her accent changes more than Madonna's.
Funny thing, I didn't know this until recently. They actually computerized her voice. They digitized her voice so it sounded different from Padme and Amidala, which as the movie goes on, you find out that there's two different characters, but it's actually the same character.
Right, but even the queen herself.
So when she's talking as the queen, they digitized it so it sounds a little bit more, and it does. It sounds kind of more of a robotic type of
robotic
thing.
British, like fucking like Madonna when yeah, after Madonna so,
yeah. It's good, yeah.
made that nasty book, she just started talking had that English accent. All of a sudden, that's what it sounded like.
Yeah, wasn't she married to what's his name? Guy Ritchie.
Right, Guy Ritchie. So anyway. So they rescue the queen, the ruler of the Naboo people, and they escape the planet on her royal starship. I love that fucking starship.
Starship was nice.
Badass. Like it was. It was shiny, but it was like new car, new expensive car, shiny throughout the fucking movie. It was like whoa,
sure,
this,
yeah, right.
No, right. No. It was like this is like the. Even like
they're
in
getting
the toy
shot up too.
Where?
I mean there's no marks or nothing.
Dude, even in like the toy store when the toys came out, I was like, this is like if I had room in my room where I lived, I was like, I would totally bring this home and let it sit on my dresser. I had no room for it. It was awesome, you know? So they escaped the planet on her starship, which is obviously, like Lou says, it's damaged by the as they pass the blockade.
Yes.
Right? Okay. So
that's your introduction to R2, where R2 fixes the...
The R2 unit.
He gets them enough to get enough, a little bit of hyperdrive.
The hyperdrive goes... It was unable to get the hyperdrive, and it lands on the planet Tatooine. So Tatooine... holds a special place with me. As a kid, I was always amazed by the two moons. Always.
Yes, that was
and cool. The fucking sand people. Like, I was, like, hooked. And we'll get into New Hope in a couple of months, obviously. But, like, when they land on Tatooine, I'm in the theater, like, I'm giddy. You know, it's like the it's kindergarten all over again. Oh, yeah. It's the first grade. I'm like, this is the best. Yeah, I'm yeah, like, exactly. I'm fucking cheering. People are like, what are you, sit down, fatty. You know, I'm like, this is the best. You guys don't know, like. Yeah. And I'm not even gonna lie, I got emotional. Like, this is perfect. I hope I see a hut. I hope I see, like, this my initial reaction. Like, I hope I see a hut. I hope I see a fucking bounty hunter. I want to see the band.
Tusken Raiders.
Yeah. I want to see a fucking Jawa. Yep. I want to see all of it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So they land on Tatooine. Qui-Gon, Jar Jar, R2-D2, and Lou mentions Amidala's handmaiden Padme, who's also played by Natalie Portman.
Which, an initial watching of the movie, I did not see them two as the same people.
No.
I did not. They totally did a great job.
I think it was the clothes and the fact that...
Also, you know, Keira Knightley, who was in the Pirates of the Caribbean and all that stuff.
Yes.
She played
the handmaiden.
The queen. She actually played the queen.
She played the queen while they were in...
Yeah, while she was the handmaiden.
Right.
And you really, I mean, even I look at that movie to this day, and I'm like, I still can't see the difference. They look so alike. And I actually said in behind the scenes that I think it was Keira Knightley's mother who didn't know the difference between the two of them. That's how much they look alike. And they were only both like 16 years old when they did this movie, between 14 and 16 years old.
Yeah. So, hold on one second here. I want to play a little bit of the escape here for a second. Give me one second. Let's just play this for a second.
Out all our communications.
Do you have transport?
In the main hangar. This way.
There are too many of them.
Won't be a problem. Your Highness, under the circumstances, I suggest you come to Coruscant with us.
Thank you, Ambassador. But my place is with my people.
They will kill you if you stay.
They wouldn't dare.
They need her to sign a treaty to make this invasion of theirs legal. They can't afford to kill her.
There is something else behind all this, Your Highness. There's no logic in the Federation's move here. My feelings tell me they will destroy you.
Our only hope is for the Senate to side with us. Senator Palpatine will need your help.
Either choice presents great danger to us all.
We are brave, Your Highness.
If you are to leave, Your Highness, it must be now.
Then I will plead our case to the Senate. Be careful, Governor.
So they make the escape. I just want to just to play the voice, and I want to get everybody familiar with what's going on. Can't play the whole movie, obviously. It's like fucking 2 hours, but you see my point.
So we're on Tatooine now?
We're on Tatooine, and they go to a spot called... one of the settlements is called Mos Espa. Yes. Mos Espa is like, I guess, the Port Richmond of fucking Tatooine. Port Richmond's like a little, you know, it's a... Not well, they're Port Richmond. No, really, like Park Hill of the of if you live on where we live, it's a really shitty part of Tatooine.
Yeah, it's a little worse than Mos Eisley.
Yeah, it is a little worse than it because that's where like the main hub of slaves are being held.
Yeah,
right at that point. So now you have to understand
got more
something.
Gambling and more of the criminal empires over there.
Right, you have to understand too. The Outer Realm didn't recognize anything of the Federation, none of that. So their currency was not there. The laws were there's no laws there. So it was their law, and that was it. You know. So they go to Mos Espa to buy new parts to fix the ship. You know, they go to this junk shop. So there they meet Watto. Talk about Watto for a minute.
I love Watto.
Watto is a... I explained this to Mikey before. He is a... What do they call them? He's a Nemodian?
No, Nemodians are the... new Gunray.
Yeah, the Gunray is a Nemodian. He's a... The fuck is he? He's a... He tells you, too, like... Hold on a second. You know what? I'm just going to fast forward to Watto over here.
Now, Watto also has a little racism backstory, too.
Yeah, he does.
He sounds like he's Jewish.
Yeah.
That's what they were talking about. And the actor who played him said he was imitating Fagin from Oliver Twist.
Yeah, let's see.
Is that his name, Fagin?
Yeah, hold on a second. Let's, I'm just trying to... Let's see there.
That, I'm a Tridarian.
A Tridarian.
My trick's gonna work on me. Only money. No money, no parts, no deal. And no one else has a T-14 hyperdrive, I promise you that.
So Watto is...
I don't think he sounds Jewish at all.
No, but he's... His character, he looks like a Gonzo from the Muppets.
Yes, with some wings.
With wings. And the wings, it looks like it was operated by like a fucking... He's got some kind of speaker wire hanging out there, like in the back of him, but... But, yeah. So, Watto is the shop owner, and he's like the junk store of the neighborhood. He sells everything, mm-hmm. right? And there he's got a 9-year-old slave boy working for him named Anakin. But I think Lucas didn't want Anakin to be that young. I think the original one was, if I'm not mistaken, was supposed to be older, right?
Yeah, he was supposed to be 12.
He's supposed to be 12 years old. So here's Anakin Skywalker, who's a gifted 9-year-old pod racer. Explain to everybody what a pod is. What the original pod is.
Well, the pod racer, it looks like two jet engines pulling a cart, basically. It's just they were trying to go for like the old chariot races kind of thing with the horses pulling the cart,
yep.
but only, you know, science fiction, and we're going to make them like two giant jet engines pulling the cart. Which pod racing was kind of like the scene from Ben-Hur. That's where he got the whole scene from. That's what
right.
he wanted to do.
I was yeah. about to say that,
so we
yeah.
didn't, yeah, we didn't get up to that yet, but...
That's fine.
Yeah, that's what the pods were, basically. And that was their gambling there. That was their horse racing
yeah.
on Tatooine, basically.
Right, so here's the thing, too. This kid's a pilot. He's an engineer. He's 9 years old. He builds a protocol droid, which is now the introduction of C-3PO.
Yep.
He builds a protocol. He's building a protocol droid to help his mom, mm-hmm. who's also a slave. Shmi. Of course, now Qui-Gon, being the visionary that he is, sees that that Anakin has gifts.
Yes, the main the pod racing. What do they say? They say something about like. You have to have quick reflexes, and no humans can do it.
Right.
But he can foresee
yeah.
the reaction before it happens.
Yep.
So, and that was why he was such a good pilot.
So Anakin, he's convinced that Anakin's the chosen one of the Jedi prophecy. And the Jedi's believe that there's one particular person or being that can bring balance to the Force in the universe. And yep. they think Anakin is the one.
Yep.
So Qui-Gon... wages Anakin's freedom with Watto in a pod race.
Before we get to that, do you want to talk about the midichlorians?
So now while Qui-Gon is trying to get these parts, he's checking in with Obi-Wan, you know, via radio frequently.
He checks his blood.
Now he takes Anakin's blood and ships it over to the ship, and apparently, midichlorians in the blood. Explain what the midichlorians are to people who don't know who Star Wars.
That is basically the explanation for what the Force is. So midichlorians, if you have a high midichlorian count, that means you have more power on the Force.
Right.
And supposedly, Anakin has more than Yoda, which right. is like the strongest.
Yoda had the most at that yes. point. Right.
And that pissed off a lot of people because the Force was always a spiritual thing. Then all of a sudden, now George Lucas is trying to explain it by a scientific reason. It's kind of like a spider blood kind of thing. Like, you know what
I mean? Right. It wasn't a thing where the blood wasn't genetically enhanced, though, right?
No.
So if you had midichlorians in your blood, you were gifted.
Yeah.
It was just his way of
kind
saying...
Kind of a mutant, like.
Almost. Yeah, like you're a meta-human. Or you're a meta being, because these guys, none of these people yeah. are human. Yeah, they're yeah. fucking, they're aliens.
Yeah, exactly.
They look human because, you know, you can't make a bunch of aliens, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's tons of Jedi around the universe, and they're all different. They're all different races and different
species,
yeah. gender, you know? Yeah. Like, so you know, it's not far-fetched that you find somebody, but this was, like Lou says, it's over the top. So midichlorian count is way high, and of course now Obi-Wan, being inquisitive, says, like, hey, you know, is this, you know, is he the one? I don't know. You're like, yeah. Well, I don't know, but I know this kid's special. If he's fucking building robots and pod racing and...
9 years old.
9 years old. You know, the kid doesn't even have...
pubes yet.
Yeah, yeah. So he wages with Anakin's freedom with Watto in a pod race. So this is what I wanted to get into, and this is another thing that people did not like, was the pod race.
How can you not?
But you see, this is the thing, man. My wife didn't like the pod race.
Really?
Yeah. And I asked her the other day, I was like, why? She thought it was too CGI. Like, she thought it was too over the top. Here's where the only thing I agree with her with was I didn't like the announcer guys.
Mm.
You know, the two-headed guys,
Yeah.
I thought that it was too hokey.
Hokey, yeah, it was, yeah.
Adding, like, shitty announcing, like NASCAR announcing to a fucking pod race. It was, like, didn't need to happen. I enjoyed seeing Jabba the Hutt. I enjoyed seeing some of the old characters, like, you know, like...
The same people shooting at the
team. Right. So, before this happens, they're going around the town, and Jar Jar can't keep his fucking hands off anything. And he goes and... goes and takes a piece of food, and the vendor's like, "You gonna pay for that?" And he's like, "He doesn't know. He's a retarded Jamaican Gungan, right?" So he takes the food, snaps it back, and it falls into the lap of Sebulba. So now Sebulba is how would you describe Sebulba?
He was, I don't know, kind of.
Well, I'm going to look him up while you try to describe.
He definitely had, like, spider features. Like,
yeah.
The way he walked around and everything, like, on four legs.
This pod race is filled with characters that just, you know... for me, anyway... Where would I find this? He's got to be in here. Yeah, 145. I should have tagged... Next show, I'm going to just tab all the ones that we're going to talk about. This way we don't have to keep fucking referencing... Because I don't really do stuff
to me
like
that. The pod race though itself is just, I mean, I'm an avid movie watcher, and I just don't see how people say like there's too much CGI.
Sebulba is a species called a Dug. He's a Dug. He's from his homeworld is Malastar, and he's got grasshopper legs, but he walks on like regular hands, like almost. If that makes sense. He was one of the most popular races in history of the sport, you know. He went under the Old Republic. And he's a filthy thug.
Yeah.
You know? And the Dugs are... They're just thugs in general. They don't... So...
He's Anakin's archenemy, basically.
Right, because Anakin constantly races against him, but Sebulba always sabotages the pod. Anakin, at this point, has never finished a race.
Yeah, because he crashes it all the time.
Crashes it all the time. So it was funny because they, as they're fixing up the pod, then the piece for the, they're getting the parts for the pod, Padme says, "You've never finished a race?" Well, technically, no. And Anakin's friends are like, one kid looks like he's Pakistani. The other one looks like Greedo.
Yeah, little baby Greedo.
Little baby Greedo, you know. Who spoke English, which was weird to me because Greedo didn't speak English.
No, he didn't speak English, no.
No.
He said Annie.
Yeah.
He said Annie.
Yeah. Right. So, again, cool, but he's never won a race before.
So back to what we were saying about the pod racing.
Right. Get back to the pod race.
My thing with the pod race, well, when I first got my first surround sound system, first thing I did was pop that DVD in, and I went right to the freaking pod race and said, "Let's see how this fucking thing sounds." And I was blown away, and I was like, yes. Because the sound design on that freaking pod race is amazing.
Yeah.
If you have a surround sound system, blast it on that. And you just, there's just little things that you notice, little engine sounds and everything. That's it's so great. But it's just an action-packed racing scene. I mean, I just didn't see it any other way. It's just really fun. I mean, there's nothing to me that I could see. Like when you said about two CGI, I mean, it didn't look like a cartoon to me. That's what I call bad CGI, you know.
So as they're fixing the ship and as Qui-Gon is realizing that Annie's special, he has a conversation with the mom, with Shmi, and, you know, who's his dad? He doesn't have a dad. Like, I just became pregnant. And now I can tell you this. In the theater, people were like, oh.
Yeah, I kind of was, too. I think that was the first time I went, oh, not through Jar Jar, but that.
Yeah, that was my second, oh.
That was so Jeebus.
Like, and I don't want to get into religion because, again, the Force, like you mentioned a little while ago, is a spiritual thing. And
well, yeah, he based a lot of the stuff. And they even said that even this movie was a lot of Christian themes on it, with Darth Maul kind of looking like the Christian devil and stuff like that. There's a lot of, you know, with the Zen, being the Force is supposed to be, of course, between, what is that called, Buddha. So they always said that, like, you know, Yoda was supposed to be like the Buddha. But there's always religious themes throughout Star Wars. But I think that one kind of like threw it in your face, like, a little too obvious now. You know what I mean? Before it was subtle, now you're going a little too far.
So let's talk about Darth Maul. Because as they escape the Tatooine, the Darth Sidious says, I'm sending my apprentice, Darth Maul, to find the Jedi and the Queen, because they need her to sign this peace treaty, you know?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Darth Maul for a minute.
Yes. Easily the best part.
Ray Park played Darth Maul, right?
Killed it.
Yeah. Now, Ray Park was also Nightcrawler, right?
No, Toad.
Toad, I'm sorry.
Yes, he played Toad.
I'm sorry, he was an X-Men, though.
Yes.
Okay. So, Darth Maul is, he's a Iridonian Zabrak. That's his name of his species.
They actually do a really good story with him on the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
On the cartoon.
It says here in the guide that he was a weapon forged from one purpose only, the destruction of the Jedi. And the Maul's master, Darth Sidious, held no sentimental illusions about his apprentice. Maul was neither a friend nor a surrogate son. He was simply an implement. When Maul was struck down on Naboo, Sidious cast him aside like a broken blade and quickly obtained a replacement. He was a Zabrak from Iridonia, but details of his early life are non-existent. He was taken from his home planet as an infant by Darth Sidious, who wanted to claim the Force-sensitive child as his own before Maul could be discovered by the Jedi. Sidious was a cruel teacher. We know that. So Maul had no childhood, apparently. He was just, like, you know, taken from his planet because they didn't want him to fall to... He want Yoda to pick him up.
Yeah, like I said, if you really want to know about Darth Maul, there's a couple of episodes where they really go into his homeworld, his family, everything. It's awesome. And they also made a comic book of some unfilmed episodes.
Yeah.
Called, I think it was called Son of Dathomir or something like that. Really good stuff. Really good stuff.
All right. Menacing, though. Like Lou mentioned, he was like a devil looking, you know, face paint, the horns.
Yeah, the horn, yeah.
Like badass, you
the
know.
Martial arts, man. So
yeah, cool. He's, and they, I think, honestly, I say Qui-Gon is the best character in terms of story and in terms of the acting. Of course, Darth Maul didn't even speak.
Three lines he had through the whole movie.
Right, but that wasn't even his voice.
Yes.
It was somebody else, right?
Yeah, Peter Serafowitz. He's got a long last name.
Yeah, Peter Serafowitz.
Yeah, he was actually in Shaun of the Dead. He was the roommate in the beginning.
Okay.
The tall guy?
Yes. Him. Okay, yes. Now I definitely know who he is now.
Yeah.
But, like, this guy does his own stunts. He does his own...
Yeah.
So, like, it wasn't a thing where... A lot of it wasn't CGI. It was actually him doing the acrobatics. And, you know, we'll get into the fight scene later on because it actually won an MTV award. Best fight scene. if you were into that back then. The MTV had the movie awards. I think they still do.
They still do, yeah.
I haven't watched MTV in almost 20 years. Yeah. It's crazy. But so now you have that element as well. As they're trying to get off this planet, as they're trying to get to where they got to get, now you have Darth Maul with his drones looking for the fucking for the crew. So,
well, they're looking for Amidala.
Yeah,
yeah.
They wanted to sign the peace treaty.
Yeah.
So, all right. So let's talk about the pod race. All right. Like I said, they mentioned a bunch of characters. You see the Hutts. Jabba was a bit svelte. He wasn't as big as he was in the...
Yeah, you know. He was young.
He was young back in the day. Young Hutt.
So I think it was, 32 years? Yeah, 32 years before A New Hope.
Yeah. So really, was that long? Yeah. Shit. Yeah, all right. So he was a mini Hutt, half a Hutt. The Hutts were... They were a family of... If you don't know who Jabba the Hutt is, again, you should be listening to this. But the Hutts were like the John Gotti of the Outer Realm.
Yeah.
The Gambino crime family.
The Corleones, yeah.
The Corleones. They ran everything, trade, anything that made money went through them.
Yep.
You know? There's actually a book called Tales from Jabba's Hutt. Tales from Jabba's Palace, I mean.
Jabba's
Palace,
yeah.
Which just... Mob stories.
Awesome, yeah, it's so great.
Right? Mob stories, and this is one of my favorite. Matter of fact, I have a supervisor at work who's of our age. His name is Tony Brooks. And Tony is a cool dude, and my first interaction with him, he got a wind of I was into Star Wars, and he goes, "Read any of the Zam books?" I'm like, "Yeah, you know, did you read Jabba's Tales from Jabba's Palace?" I'm like, "You fucking kidding me? I owned that book. I wish I still did."
I want to get it.
I want to get it back because we gave them away to people, but I gotta get all my books back. I missed them all. They were just good shit. But the Hutts were, everything went through them, including the pod races.
Yep.
And like Lou mentioned before, pod races were like the horses. It was like the ponies. It was like the dog races in down Florida, shit like that. Just to get back to my screen. There we go. And you know it's so here we are. We're at the race, and they announce everybody. Anakin's all set. They wish him well. The Force be with you. You know, gives him the blessing. And like Lou mentions, it's a spectacle. If you do have a surround sound system, it's loud, and you can hear every single aspect of the race. You hear the engines, you hear the scrapes, you can hear the bumps, the explosions at one point.
And then the way to it, like, it'll just get quiet all of a sudden. It'll just, like, something will pass by, and then all of a sudden it just gets quiet, and then, it's just so great the way he pulled off that whole sound system.
Yeah, Anakin, Lucas, the sound is... Like, the sound is a staple now in theater. Yep. Like, any movie theater you go to, it was that concept.
I believe it's 8.1 now. That's what he created, 8.1.
Yeah. So he fucking revolutionized Adobe Digital Surround sound. So
a couple of times, actually.
A couple times over. THX is the company.
Yeah, well, that was the original sound that he did.
Yeah.
Then he just kept upgrading it and
was
getting
like,
crazy.
Yeah. When you watch, there's a documentary called Something with Empire. I forget the name of the fucking documentary. I think you know what I'm talking about, too. The Building of an Empire or something like that.
I know, yeah.
Okay. And they go into detail on how after every movie, they had to keep building more space for the effects guys, for the model guys. When they were still doing the clicks of the camera, doing the scale models and shit like that for the original movie.
Well, he was always thinking that as he was filming, he was like, all right, we're going to be doing this new way, but we got to think of a quicker and a cheaper way to do it. So this way, when everybody else wants to do it, we know how to do it right away. So he was always thinking business-wise. Anytime he created something new to film, like with special effects or whatever, he already had in mind somebody else that would come to him, like Disney, if they wanted to do a new movie or whatever.
Right.
He would already know, like, all right, listen. Let's come up with an easy way to do this, so this way we can do this cost efficiently and fast. So this way everybody will come to us to ask, you know, to get that stuff done, which is, you know, why ILM he created ILM, and ILM was the top, you know, special effects CGI for years, for almost more than a decade until what is it, Weta, WETA, mm-hmm. Peter Jackson's group,
yeah,
with, Lord of the Rings,
Lord
and all
of
that.
The Rings and all that, yeah, King Kong,
yeah,
yeah.
So he revolutionized something every time he made a movie. he created something new, created new cameras, created a new sound system.
So, insane.
Yeah, it really is.
Insane. So, during the pod race, the best part for me was when the sand people were taking shots with their guns at the contestants. I thought that was awesome, and then they were celebrating. You know, I thought it was fantastic. Just again, bringing back the old movies, and it was like just. It makes your heart smile, you know. You like get all giddy inside, you know.
The Jawas too.
Jawas were in there. Yeah, Jawas were like the Irish back in the day. The Jawas were like when the Italians and the Irish got together and they were moving stuff in New York City. Like that's what the Jawas were. They're like, all right, listen, you know, we have the merch, you got the muscle, let's move everything around. And this was a really slimy part of the world, you know. Tatooine is not. For me, it's the nicest place in the world because it brings you back to a, you know, happy time in my life. But in hindsight, it's a shithole. You know, it's terrible.
You won't find a place of more villainy or scum.
That's right. He's right. So the race turn comes down to obviously Sebulba and Anakin. Sebulba sabotages the Anakin's pod. Anakin, with his reflexes and his Jedi skill that he hasn't even harnessed yet, winds up getting his pod back in order and tricking Sebulba and deking him out and, in you know, eventually winning the race. Yeah. Sadly, though, he only gets his freedom, not his mom. And I think because she immaculately conceived him and you know, knew something like this was bound, somebody was bound to figure out that this kid's not, he is not from here, he's from someplace else, you know? Yeah. I think she had she was willingly letting him go to go to his true calling, which is to become a Jedi. Okay. It's a bumpy ride because, you know, Anakin wins the race and then he joins the group, leaves his mom behind, and then they go to repair the ship, and that's where they meet Darth Maul for the first time.
Yes. Also, back to the mother thing too.
Yeah.
He has a hard time leaving her, and that kind of is like foreshadowing later on. Padme Amidala, whatever.
Yeah.
Where he has a problem of he's always getting separated from something, which Yoda brings up later on.
Right.
He's constantly, and that's where his emotional stuff comes from, which will later lead him to other places.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be the next 2 months. That's going to be fun. So the first meeting with them was interesting because they now know that there's someone else.
Yes.
They know now that this is the guy. Like, oh boy, now we have to, like, they
the
know.
Sith, yeah, the Sith.
Yeah, the Sith are an ancient fucking crew. And you know, you only heard stories about the Sith. You didn't know that they existed. You knew they existed, but you didn't know where they were or when they were going to show their face. They waited so long that, you know, now they figured this is going to be the time, you know. If I'm missing anything on your notes,
because there was a war. There was a Jedi war.
Right.
I believe. I don't know the details for it. It was a comic. And that's actually where they first introduced the double-sworded lightsaber, the double lightsaber. And that's where George Lucas used it from the comic book for Darth Maul.
Okay.
Because that lightsaber was badass.
Yeah.
And the way he used it.
Yeah, I have a Christmas ornament that's that hangs proudly on my tree every year.
I bought the actual toy for it, so...
Yeah, oh, that's cool. Yeah, and I don't have.
I pull it out every
cool.
time.
That's cool. Yeah,
I was gonna bring it tonight, but it was like, oh man, it was. I know you would appreciate it.
The Jedi escort Amidala to the Republic capital, planet of Coruscant, so she can plead her case to the Chancellor and the Senate. And now this is where Qui-Gon goes to the Council,
the Jedi Temple,
the Temple,
yes,
and asks to train Anakin. But again, it's the council is concerned that Anakin is old, and he's old because they get them at like, you know, 5 years old. Yeah, you know, he's old and he's vulnerable to the dark side.
He's very conflicted. That's what they say. Right. Because he's about conflicted. His mother. He's they feel like, you know, he's, what does he say? Fear. He's
fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hatred. Hate leads to
suffering.
Suffering. So now they say no. So Qui-Gon's like, oh, I'm going to do it anyway.
And also, this is an introduction to Mace Windu.
Let's talk about Sam Jackson for a minute before we get into the whole. You want to do the cast, and or you want to get into Mace now?
Well, I mean, we just talk about Mace real quick.
All right.
I mean, this is just
so Mace Windu is played by Sam Jackson, who's a bald, badass looking Jedi.
Bad motherfucker.
Right. Now, but like, I don't know. You know his backstory?
Mace Windu? No, I don't. Actually, it's fun. I know the original script. The main character's name was Mace Windu.
Windu.
Mace Windu. I don't know why I'm saying window. But Mace Windu. But, that's a good point. That they really don't delve into him.
Well, here's what I know. That when he was approached to do the movie, he said he would do it if he got a different color lightsaber.
The purple lightsaber. He wanted it specifically.
And he said this on David Letterman.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, he was lobbying for the role.
Right.
He wanted the role.
Right. So the guy who got him involved was like, yeah, we got the part. He's like, yeah, but I want a purple lightsaber. Here's my thing. You don't tell George Lucas what kind of lightsaber you want. You just, like, you should be lucky you have one. We've been looking for one for 35 years. We have to buy ours in a toy store.
Yeah.
This motherfucker gets one. He gets a lightsaber. It's purple. Like, no, it's either red, blue, or green. There's no other ones.
Can you imagine just the phone call from that one? Listen, motherfucker, you're gonna get me my purple lightsaber. Nobody's done it, and Sam did it,
and he got the purple lightsaber. All right, so now he, of course, they deny he's someone to train him anyway. Palpatine persuades Amidala to make the vote, the no confidence vote, right?
Yes, to Chancellor Valorum.
Right, and to elect more capable chancellor to fix the whole mess on
Naboo. Yeah.
Right. You know, Amidala grows frustrated with the nonsense, which is the corruption, which we deal with now in our world politics, and decides, I want to return to Naboo for my people. You know, so finally, with no digital voice enhancement, Amidala reveals herself.
Well, that's, yeah, when they get back to Naboo, yeah, to Boss Nass asking for the Gungan's help.
Yes. Yeah. So, and of course, they agree. And now here's the thing. Here's what bothers me. They give Jar Jar, like, leadership roles. Like 45 minutes ago, you were exiled from your fucking from your place of residence.
General, I think, right? They made him like general?
Yeah, that's what my son said. He goes, they made Jar Jar a general. And he's reading the book, and I'm like, yeah. He goes, why? Why is he? This is a 7-year-old asking me this.
That's awesome.
Why is he a general? I don't know. Are the Gungans stupid? I don't know. I don't know. I just thought that was kind of like cheesy too. And then watching it again, I was like, oh, it's still cheesy. Because you know how, like...
Yeah, I never really thought really into it like that.
You know...
But yeah, it is.
You know how you have a movie that you, like, you kind of like when you're a kid, and then when you're older and you figure out what was in the movie, you're more accepting of it and you appreciate it more? I kind of appreciate this more watching it again when you and I first decided to do this. But some of the stuff was just same old hat to me. Like, Jar Jar still sucked to me. Making him a general sucked to me. Amidala's Madonna accent bothered me. The costume changes kind of bothered me a little bit. Mm-hmm. But that was the thing. Like, well, I got a Christmas ornament for her, right? And I was happy because it was the one with the red, the big red gown that she had.
Yes.
I have that Christmas ornament. So I got that and Darth Maul like the same year. I was all stoked in the Hallmark store. Like, this is going to be fucking badass on my Christmas tree. And I do that, and like they come out with like 17 other ones. I'm like, come on, man. It's like action figures. Like, I don't want to buy seven. Like when I was a kid, when Kenner put out like the there was like seven different Luke Skywalkers. I'm like, oh, I got to get the Hoth one. I got to get the Jedi one. I got to get the Tatooine one. You know, and you had to mail the little proofs of purchase away to get the Hoth special figure of Solo, and you get the, you know, right. Okay. It's not like, you know, I was frustrated. But again, I understood the whole, it was the culture of the Naboo and her, and when you look at, like Lou says, how breathtaking Naboo is, if you've never seen the movie, you know why she's got those costume changes, because it's a fancy place.
Yeah, and they I think they got off like the Chinese dynasty they were going for.
Yeah, it's like the Westchester of this part of the world. It's classy, you know. That's it, you know.
That's it.
But again, now she reveals herself. Jar Jar leads the people against the droid army, while Padme leads the hunt to look for the Gunray. At the Threed Palace, right?
That was also another thing to note. That Naboo with the Gungans versus the droids.
Yes.
Was the first time that they've ever made a pure CGI army versus army. Like, now they do it all the time. Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah. And,
you know, the every freaking damn fairy tale that comes out.
Yeah, I just saw the, what was that? The Gods movie with the...
Oh, Exodus?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. They got to throw in another...
When they part the Red Sea and all that? Yeah, that's all CGI. I mean, fantastic. But yeah, but so that was the first ever full CGI
full
fight
GIC,
scene.
Full army, yeah.
Really?
Usually they would like put a couple of people in there in between. And what's interesting too, just to make it sure that everybody didn't look like they were doing the same, they literally filmed a bunch of people doing different movements and then just mixed them around. So this way it looks like everybody's doing something different, like they're their own person.
That's awesome.
Yeah, really is, man. It's just like, wow. Again, that's awesome. Revolutionary from George Lucas.
Yeah, again, Lucas revolutionary. So now they eventually capture the crew and his aide. And in the hangar, Anakin, they tell Anakin to hide, right, at this point?
Yeah.
In one of the battle.
Yeah, you know, don't hide behind that crate over there. Go into one of those starships.
One of the starships and hide with R2.
Yeah,
right?
With R2. You never know when you need an astromech droid.
You know, Anakin goes into the ship and pretty much wrecks it. And now he triggers the autopilot, and now he's in the dogfight.
Yep.
Like, that threw me off, too. I was like,
nine-year-old.
Come on, man. Listen, it's on autopilot. I get it. You have midichlorians. You got your Gatorade. You got your R2-D2. You're fine. But, like, I thought that was reaching a little bit.
Yeah, I agree.
This is just me nitpicking. You know, if...
That was... And like I said, I don't nitpick a lot. But that one, I was... you know, you got me through the pod... I mean, through the pod racing. But now you're talking about freaking shooting against other starships.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a little tough to swallow.
Right. So now this whole plan is now to deactivate the droid army because they're remotely controlled by...
giant space station.
Space station, right. Yeah. So now we get to the best part of the movie. This is the best part of the movie.
The music starts and that's it. The chill's gone.
I'm saving the music for the outro. I'm playing the whole shit. That's going to be our outro tonight. But this is the best part of the movie.
Yeah.
So let's... Am I missing anything on your notes?
No, not
anything that I did that I skipped?
No, stuff we're going to go through later on.
Are you sure?
Yep.
Okay. All right.
I pretty much memorized my stuff, so...
I know you took notes. I didn't want you to, you know... So, all right. My favorite part of the movie is the fight scene between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan against Darth Maul. So... The initial, you know, they get to the one part of the hangar, it opens up, and it's him, it's Darth Maul, and then the two Jedis, and the whole crew's behind him, and then Padme's like, you got this,
exactly.
we'll go the other way and, you know, do that, and right away, Like, he comes out, the robes come off, and then once he... Now, I'm going to tell you, I don't know about your movie theater, but where I was in Queens, when that second part of the Saber lit up... Now, I had no clue about that. Like, I didn't read the books. Like, you read the comic books, so I had no...
Well, no, Darth Maul wasn't in that, though.
No, he wasn't in those books?
No, and I didn't know about that.
Oh, you didn't know about that either? Okay, good, okay.
I did know about it, but only because I had the t-shirt on the night we went to go see the... All right, real quick, funny story.
Okay.
The opening night, I still haven't been able to live this down. We all rush in to get the movie. As soon as they let us in, I run in front of the line to get the best seats, right? So I'm with my brothers, I'm with my friends. So we all get our seats. We got the best seats in the house, whatever. So I get up to take my jacket off, and they all see for the first time I'm wearing a Darth Maul t-shirt. And they're like, are you fucking kidding me, bro? I was like, I'm excited. So, yeah.
I left the foam fingers at home, man.
Exactly. So, yeah, to this day, when I was telling them I was doing this, they was like, you better tell that story, man, because we will never let you live that one down.
Yeah, right?
And I said, don't worry, I'll do it again next when The Force Awakens.
I wish my Luke Skywalker underoos still fit.
Yeah, right.
But we'll get into that in a couple months, too. That was some fun shit.
So, yeah, so when I went to double lightsaber.
Right, so now that second part lit up, the entire theater erupted.
Yes.
Like... Whoa! And people were clapping, like, wait, you can't clap for this guy? He's the fucking bad guy, you know? I was like, oh, that is so bad. Like, again, all my boys at the Parker Lewis. Whoosh! And I'm like, yeah. Badass. The music, like Lou says, the music cues up, and it was like, genius for that. Like, and I'm not a classical music guy. I mean, I have Star Wars music for me is my I used to suffer from really bad hypertension when I was a lot bigger, and I used to go to work and get aggravated, and my blood pressure would be like through the sky, you know. And I'd get on a coming home from work, I'd put my iPod on, and I would like just regress, you know, and be like, oh man, like that was really like my calming music, you know. But hearing this shit, you just want to you just want to cut people up. You want to just.
They had it on the PlayStation 1 game, The Phantom Menace, on the PlayStation 1. And they played it throughout the whole game. And it was like the best thing. It was just like.
The only game I had was the pod racing game for N64. Yeah, that's the only Star Wars game I had for men. I didn't have the PS1 game. But I know what you meant. I saw the game. I didn't play it, though.
I think I played every Star Wars game on every console that there was. I actually bought the PlayStation 1 after it was already PlayStation 2 had already come out just to play some certain games that I didn't get to play.
Yeah. So the fight scene is probably the best part of the movie. Darth Maul is amazing. The Darth Maul's got to fight two guys now.
I'm going to go a little further on that. I think it's the best fight scene out of all the movies. As far as it's nuts, that fight.
Yeah.
It's technically, I mean, just everything on that fight is... Besides the emotional stuff, like from Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, you see, Empire's got the emotion. Jedi's got the real emotion. Like, there was not really...
There's not a lot of movement.
No, just a lot of battle scenes, like group scenes. There wasn't a thing with... I don't think...
No, I'm talking about lightsaber scenes. That's what I'm not a battle scene.
Well, but yeah, the lightsaber scenes were... See, that's the thing. I think Lucas was... He was reaching on this. Because I think he had the technology, A... And B, this character particularly is not emotionally invested in what's going on.
Yeah.
He's almost like a hired gun.
Yes.
So, like, does that make sense? Or
No, it does.
Right, because then I was like, okay, well, it's not where Vader has the
yeah,
and it's not like where it's in the two movies. It's like, you know,
that's true. Yeah.
So,
emotional wise, that's what I mean. Like, emotional wise, yeah, no, I agree. There's better fights. But, I mean, just technical-wise, I mean, they're bouncing all over the place. You know, there's martial arts involved. There's there was Kenpo, I think. I had it somewhere here. But they use two different types of martial arts to incorporate that
right,
whole
thing. The choreography was off the chain. Yeah. He had the guy. You see, when you have a guy like Ray Park, he's the perfect guy because it's his background.
But even, like, I mean, when you look at the making of, watching Ewan McGregor and Liam Neeson, like, they're not doing, like, two or three strokes of the lightsabers. They're going through, like, full, like, you know, at least 30 seconds to like a minute worth of fighting.
Yeah.
Non-stop. Yeah. And that's the minute that they learned that. It was just like, wow. And I was watching the making of it, like I said, and just seeing them do those moves, like, wow, dude, like you're a natural.
Right, right,
like,
yeah.
Like, you could imagine how much work had to go into that.
Right.
You know, just to get those moves like that and to look like you know what you're doing.
Right.
Be comfortable with a lightsaber.
So now the fight scene is now intense. Obviously, you could tell Qui-Gon is the more experienced fighter because he's the more experienced Jedi, where Obi-Wan is still the apprentice. He's still learning. Not that he's reserved, but Qui-Gon's getting the more of the moves in.
And he's also more like relaxed.
Yeah. Where Obi-Wan's like all over the place, yeah. Like, you know, what do I do next, you know? Which leads, obviously, to the demise of Qui-Gon, which, like, takes the life out of the movie. Mm-hmm. I think it was, like, the game changer, you know? His character leaving was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like it's... Because he was the guy. He championed the whole movie.
Yeah,
like,
basically, yeah, I was just gonna say. Yeah,
you know, he was the best character in the entire movie. You know, now he's dead. So now, you see this. Like, where are you now when you see this? You like, oh, are you thinking the same thing I am, or you're like, oh, this is like ridiculous. You know, or did you kind of figure like this is the way it had to happen?
It had to happen like that.
Yeah.
I figured he was gonna die by the end of the movie because Obi-Wan needs to take over first of all. You know, he's the big thing. But it also, you see Obi-Wan just snap. Like, he just changes, like, after he does his whole, no.
That's it.
And, yeah, he's, and it, that scene, man, the intensity.
Yeah.
Where they're waiting for that force field to go down, and they're both just looking at each other. And it was like, before when they did that, you see Qui-Gon, he's just, like, kind of sitting there, patiently waiting for the force field to open, and then, boom, fucking Obi-Wan's ready to fucking blow, man. He's just sitting there, he's bouncing back and forth, man. He's just like, come on, open the door.
Because what Lou's saying is, if you haven't seen the movie, there's a bunch of, they're in the middle of the space station, and there's these force fields that are actually acting as barriers in between each couple of sequences of fights. So now Obi-Wan's just waiting for the shield to go back up.
Yeah.
So he can go in there and finish what Qui-Gon started.
And yeah, you just see the intensity, and it kind of reminded you of the intensity that Luke has in Return.
In Return of the Jedi, yeah.
When he finds out about his sister, you know, when Vader says that one line, you know, oh, there's another, your sister, and he comes out and he's just fucking swinging. It's like there's no technical thing to that.
No, now the emotion takes over.
Yeah, and he's just banging on him.
Yeah, and that's pretty much it. Once the emotion takes over, it just makes the scene that much dramatical, you know, that much better.
Yeah.
So the how it ends is Obi-Wan is just now coming into his own. This is the turning point of Obi-Wan Kenobi. This was probably what he needed to put him over the top to make him a complete knight. He didn't have to go to fucking Dagobah. He didn't have to read a manual. This was it. He didn't have to hang out in the temple and meditate. He just lost his master. There's a war going on.
He also, the fact that he killed the Dark Jedi also was what propelled him to the next level.
So that's what happens. Yeah. He slices Darth Maul in half.
To the chagrin of everyone in the theater. I remember everybody's like, ah, really?
Again, because you know what I love about Star Wars is that you invest emotions in the weirdest of characters.
100%. Because really, like, just because this guy looks cool and he fights cool, but I think the biggest example of that is Boba Fett.
He's my favorite character of all time.
Have you seen Fanboys yet?
Yes.
Okay.
We'll talk about Fanboys. Okay. But, so, you know, as we go along, you get to know that we have invested our time and our emotion in some of these characters because of the way they look, the way they act, just things about them, just the look about them, just even, like, minuscule characters, like, you know, Salacious Crumb was like a thing where, like, oh, that's hysterical.
He's great, yeah.
Yeah, right. So, but we'll get into that in a couple of months. But like, now I've invested my time and my energy in a 2.5 hour movie to not one, not two, but three different characters at this point in the game. The movie's a third of the way over now. Mm. And you're like, oh, the best guy's dead.
Because you were hoping he would come back for at least a sequel.
Right. The bad looking dude is, I'm thinking, like, he's the guy. I thought he was going to be like the Sith that's going to lead this, you know, this charge, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, Darth Maul. Yeah. Right. You thought he was going to come back for the
right, season. Yeah. It was like there was ongoing. No. And you're like, oh, Jesus, no, it's not going to happen. Not going to happen. So he, you know, Darth Maul is now done.
And it's the same thing with Qui-Gon. I mean, they both needed to be out of the movie, though, because Sidious needed a new apprentice.
Right. Pretty much it. And we'll find out who he is in a couple. Well, we know who he is, but in another 2 months, we'll cover that. But, you know, now the emotion, now here comes the mushy part where, you know, Obi-Wan is consoling his now about to die master. He's like, you have to train Anakin. You know, that was like, you got to train Anakin now, you know?
Yeah.
And while this is going on, Senator Palpatine is now elected as the new Supreme Chancellor.
Well, let's not forget about Anakin destroying the droids.
The droids, right.
The droids.
And I totally skipped that. Anakin actually in the autopilot with the ship destroys the station, which allows the force field, I mean not the force field, the droid army to fall apart. That's it.
By accident, pretty much.
By too. Accident. and they had the upper hand. They were beating up the Gungans.
Yeah,
you
the
know?
Gungans were surrounded. They all me give up.
Yeah, me give up. You know, me say no like you. Look at here.
So now we're back to Palpatine now. Palpatine.
Yeah, Palpatine becomes the new Supreme Chancellor, and Gunray is now in cuffs. You know, he's locked up. You go in jail, homie. That's it. Council makes Obi-Wan a full-fledged Jedi, obviously, and reluctantly accepts Anakin as the apprentice.
Now, I that part bothered me. It was like, you wouldn't let Qui-Gon, a seasoned Jedi, train him, but now you're letting an apprentice... Okay, he did prove to be stronger than Qui-Gon, I guess, right. For beating Darth Maul, which he couldn't do. Qui-Gon couldn't beat him. But it just felt kind of awkward, I thought, that, you know what? Fuck it. Go for it.
You know what? You know, here's, I'll play devil's advocate. I think because they realized that the Sith revealed themselves, maybe there is something with Anakin being there. Maybe he was meant to be there. After, listen, we gave you the blood test. We showed you who he was.
I accept that. Yeah.
Maybe.
I could deal with that.
Right? Because I thought the same thing. I was like, you know what? I wrote this down the other day. I'm like, maybe that's the reason why, you know, they brought it out to the forefront. You know, it's not a thing where, I mean, the kid, it's all there. The proof is there, you know?
Yeah.
So.
I could deal with that.
So. The ceremony now is like every other ceremony in Star Wars. There's fireworks, there's music, there's the ceremony where they actually, the burning of the body.
Well, yeah, and they also, they pronounce peace in Naboo.
With Naboo, yeah. Padme gives the gift of appreciation to the Gungans, the fucking, yeah.
So now
the soccer-looking World Cup trophy. Yeah. Right. And,
like you said, now we're on the burning of
the burn. Fire. Yeah, that's a tradition. They burn the body, sort of like what the Vikings do.
Yeah,
you know when they burn them and they send them out to sea. You know,
yep.
So which is again another thing that Lucas was big on. You know, doing a whole war thing tradition. You know, but
and then you get the famous line with, you know, with always a Sith, there's always an apprentice.
There's always two of them.
So now there's only one, so who's the second one going to be?
Yeah, and Chancellor's like, oh, I'll be monitoring your career, young Skywalker. Of course you will.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink. He was surprised they brought him back because he was old.
Yeah.
You know, because he was the original Emperor, right? Which I thought was cool.
That really was. That was really awesome.
You know, it was good. You know, it was really, really good. The storyline is awesome. It's...
I've watched it twice within the last month since we said we were going to do this.
Yeah.
And both times. No problem. I, you know, little things here and there, but not enough to deter to say that this movie sucks. And that's why I think some people are a little too harsh on it. And like you said, like especially the fanboys, fangirls.
Yeah.
You know, we nitpick and everything. But it does, you know, to me, it's like I love horror movies. And I hate when I go to a movie theater and I hear people screaming and yelling through the whole movie. They're scared shitless. And then it has a horrible ending. And then they say, oh, that movie sucked. And I'm like, you just were screaming and hollering the whole movie. And because you didn't like the ending, you think the whole movie sucked? No, come on.
Yeah. Man. You know what? I think the casual moviegoer will never appreciate this genre unless you emotionally invest your time in all of it. You have to take this all in to be accepting. This is not like a thing where this is not like going to see a Liam Neeson fucking Taken 6 movie or like a Fast and the Furious or something stupid like that or something like anything that doesn't have this big of an impact on the genre, you know. It's or if you're a 007 guy, you know, I got a box set that a friend of mine just lent me. I have like every 007 movie in there. Like I'm a Roger Moore guy, but
that's what I grew up on too.
Timothy Dalton did, you know, whatever. Sean Connery. I mean, it just and the new guy's not terrible, but like if you don't get that finish, again, I hate to bring up wrestling again, but again, just tell me your story with a good finish, and I don't care what the filler is. If I walk out of there entertained, if I walk away from the TV entertained, then I got my money's worth.
I think another piece of that equation, too, is nostalgia. That's kind of like the curve. You know, like with people like me and you, where we have a nostalgia for the movie.
Is it because we're old, though?
Well, no, but it's more of the fact that it's something that you love.
Right.
So it's kind of in your eyes, they can't do no wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's like your favorite sports team.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
As bad as they are, they can't do no wrong because they're your team. They're your guys.
Exactly. So, you know, you're always going to be rooting for them.
Right. And, you're right.
No matter how bad they do, you're going to find some good in them. Well, you know what? You know, the pitching sucked, but, you know, this guy was great, though. You know, whatever.
I did it tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that guy is terrible in the field, but he got a double. You know, he drove running. Same thing. I totally get it.
So, yeah, and I think that happened especially with Phantom Menace. And, you know, one thing I read about, like, when they were talking about how come it made so much money was that the fanboys would just, I mean, come on, I think everybody saw it. Every fanboy of Star Wars saw that three times at least.
Dude, people were camping out to get tickets.
Yeah, but after they saw it, they went back again.
Yeah, I saw it three times.
Yeah, me too. And
I took different people with me. Different people with me because I felt like I needed to show them what they're missing.
Yeah.
You didn't see that? You might want to educate yourself.
Yeah.
Come on. I got the VHS at home. You know, I'll school you.
Yeah, yeah.
This is before I have VCD. This is before DVDs.
Yeah, I'm out of VCDs.
Yeah, so I still got I have the original series on VCD.
Yeah, I can't wait till we get to the original trilogy so we can talk about the differences of the special editions and all that.
That's
definitely going to be an interesting conversation.
it's going to be all right, so are we up to date on your notes?
Well, good, yeah. Let's talk about the characters, all right, and, the actors and the characters.
So we know Liam Neeson was Qui-Gon.
Now, here, a quick little trivia. I got a bunch of people that were actually going for the roles.
Good.
So, Denzel Washington, Tom Hanks, Morgan Freeman, and Kurt Russell, all originally looking at them to play Qui-Gon.
Did they
wind up going with Liam Neeson.
Well, did they all try out for
No,
it?
They didn't try out for it. Oh, they were mentioned?
Okay.
Now, people that were lobbying was a different story, like Samuel Jackson. Samuel Jackson, before he even got the part, was going around telling everybody that he wanted to be in a Star Wars movie.
Right.
But the most interesting one, I think, is Jar Jar.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm ready. Get ready for your mind to be blown.
Okay.
All right? Michael Jackson was lobbying to play Jar Jar. To the point where George Lucas was highly considering him and then realized at the last minute that he would deter from the movie. He would take away too much attention. Everybody would be focused on that Michael Jackson was in the movie.
Wow.
And when he hired Ahmed Best, who was the one who played Jar Jar, he took him to a Michael Jackson concert backstage to get Michael Jackson's approval.
No shit.
I found out about this a couple of days ago. I almost fell off my chair. I was like, get the... Imagine that movie.
Genius, though. Because he's right. Michael Jackson, the Star Wars movie?
All I keep thinking about is The Wiz.
He's on down the road.
I watched that movie last year for the first time in years since I was a kid. And Nipsey I had nightmares Russell. About it. Holy shit, that movie is fucking the most acid trip.
Creepy.
Creepy. Fuck. Wow.
Like, but Nipsey Russell's in it.
Nipsey Russell is awesome.
I mean, Nipsey Russell was the man. So,
how about this one? For Mace Windu, Tupac was lobbying.
No, he wasn't.
Tupac was lobbying for it.
See, that would fucking ruin. I hate Tupac.
He had a meeting getting ready to be set. He had people that were talking to George Lucas's people, and they were going to meet, and then he wound up getting shot and killed. And that never happened.
I don't wish anybody to die. I just, for me, I couldn't stand that guy.
I'm not a big rap fan.
I love hip hop. I just didn't. For me, Tupac was just, you know, everybody's like, oh, he's a poet. He's a genius. He's a fucking rapper. There's no genius behind that. But thank God he did not get that part.
Because then maybe Biggie would have played Boss Nass.
See, now you're just reaching, dude. Now you're just reaching.
Can you just imagine it?
No, I don't want to imagine it.
Maybe the wars would never started. Maybe they would have got together.
They would have got together. They would still be alive.
In this alternate universe where Michael Jackson is Jar Jar and Tupac is Mace
Windu. Dude, that's crazy shit.
Right?
All right.
Benedicio del Toro was originally Darth Maul. And he dropped out because they cut all of his lines. And they cut it down to three lines. You don't know who Benedicio del Toro is? The Wolfman. Did you see The Wolfman?
Yes.
Okay, he's him.
Okay.
He was in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a pretty up there actor.
Yeah, no, I know who he is. I know he is now, yeah.
So, yeah. So, he was the original Darth Maul, and because they cut his lines, he dropped out.
Wow.
They were looking for Julia Roberts to play Shmi. That never went through, but that was one of the things they were looking for. And Kenneth Branagh, you know who he is, right?
Yes.
He was supposed to be playing Obi-Wan. They wanted him for Obi-Wan.
Wow, that's crazy.
And talking about the actors.
Let's get back to that list. Hold on a minute. All right, so we love Liam Neeson as Qui-Gon. I didn't mind Ewan McGregor.
I thought he was great. Yeah.
As Obi-Wan, yeah.
He totally he channeled Alec Guinness through the whole thing.
Yeah.
He totally did.
Yeah,
when he first started talking, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, it was nice. It was a breath of fresh air knowing that that was Alec McGuinness before he was, you know, the old man. Natalie Portman, outside of the digitizing of the voice, I didn't mind her.
Yeah, I thought she was good.
I know they gave Jake Lloyd got a lot of shit for Anakin. Yeah. Like they tore him apart. The critics tore him apart.
Yeah. And he actually quit acting after this movie.
He did?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
One quick thing about that. All of them. What's his name? The guy who plays the Emperor. Ian McDiarmid. There's a scene in the making of where they just finished filming a scene. And George Lucas is talking to Rick McCollum, the producer. And he's saying, because, wow, Natalie was great. And she wasn't really that popular at that time. She only did The Professional. I think one more of the role or something like that. The Professional, Leon the Professional.
Yeah, no, The Professional was a great movie.
That was.
Man. I love that
it was
movie.
An excellent movie. And she was like, wow, she was better than I expected or whatever thing. And he was like, yeah. And Ian McDiarmid was great. He was like, ah, he's always great. He's always on his lines or whatever. And he goes, and Jake, I'm starting to learn about him. So, like, you could see, like, he was like, shit, I hired this kid. And they showed you auditions too. And they showed the other kids that were doing it. And they made him do the freaking most excruciating scene, which is the scene where he says, are you an angel? One of the things is, can anybody say that scene with a straight face?
Yeah.
When he first meets Natalie Portman's guy, Queen Amidala.
Yeah.
At the junkyard.
Says, yeah. Are you an angel?
Yeah.
You you know, people sent from somewhere else. And yeah.
But angels are from this planet.
Angels from this planet. Yeah.
But supposedly he had trouble with Jake Lloyd because he was like, yeah, sometimes he would be like spot on, and then he would just depending on his mood. He would just like they would take like so many takes just to get him going.
Yeah, Pernilla August was Shmi.
Yeah, didn't mind
did that. She do anything else? I don't even know what she did.
She played Mother Mary.
That's it.
Like a TV.
Yeah.
Thing or something.
I don't know. Oliver Ford Davies was C.O. Bibble.
I think he's an established British actor.
Yeah, he is. Hugh Quarshie was Captain Panaka.
He's another guy that, yeah, I've seen him.
Yeah, he was in Highlander, yes, a bunch of other shit.
Yes.
All right. And of course, Anthony Daniels was C-3PO. Kenny Baker, they brought back for R2-D2.
Yeah.
Frank Oz was Yoda. Now, the thing with Yoda, and I was going to get into this, but Yoda really didn't have a lot of parts in this movie. Mm. He doesn't get involved until the Clone Wars and the Return of the Sith.
And he was also still a puppet.
That's the thing, too. And there was an issue with that, apparently. But it's Frank Oz, man. He's like the... He was the puppeteer of our generation. Like, did he look a little cartoonish? Yeah. But he's supposed to be younger, too, apparently. Yeah. So it's like...
Now, they've replaced it with the CGI one and the future ones and the Blu-ray and the 3D version.
I have the Blu-ray downstairs.
Yeah, so if you watch it now there's no puppet Yoda.
Right.
It's all CGI. I mean, they totally erased it. What's funny about that is that the making of, you can see Frank Oz doing the puppeteering.
Right.
And he's showing him scenes about Jar Jar, about what they're going to do with the CGI for him. And he goes, wow, George, you're not going to need me no more after this. And he goes, what are you talking about? We're always going to need you. And I'm like, oh, yeah, by the way, we just learned. It's like we just totally took your puppeteering out and freaking replaced it with CGI.
Take your puppets and go home.
Yeah, I just need you to do your voice.
Go home and get your fucking shine box. One of my other favorite characters, not because of was Chancellor Valrum was played by Terrence Stamp.
Terrence
Stamp is General Zod. He was also in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. It was a drag queen movie. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Yes, yes, I did.
Fucking great movie. When you talk about bad guys, probably next to Darth Vader, my favorite bad. Oh, next to Darth Vader and Doctor Doom. And my favorite bad guy is General Zod.
I'm going to go with Darth Vader and then... Terrence Stamp, General Zod.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think, man.
Yeah.
Just growing up watching
that.
Kneel before Zod.
Superman 2 is Superman 2 is up there with my favorite movies of all time. Yes. Up there with The Empire and, you know, whatever. Brian Blessed is Boss Nass. We spoke about that. Andy Secombe did the voice of
Watto.
Of Watto. We talked about Ray Park being Darth Maul. Lewis McLeod was Zaboba. Warwick Davis.
Returning since Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, Return of the Jedi. He's Wicket.
Yeah.
And he was also in Willow.
Yep.
Right? Good movie. Let's see. Steve Spires was Captain Topples.
And actually, Warwick Davis played, I think, three roles in this movie.
Yeah, too. He was Wall. He was the pod race spectator, and he was the little midget walking around in Mos Espa.
Yeah, he was the little Greedo.
Little Greedo.
He was Baby Greedo.
Right, Baby Greedo. Silas Carson did a bunch of roles. He was Newt Gunray. He was Adimundi.
They showed him on the making. He was a weird.
But dude. He tried out for some. Silas Carson tried out for C.O. Bibble, and didn't get the part. I read that.
Oh, okay.
So he was that guy. Let's see.
I think everybody else is probably
just like fillers at this point. Yeah, oh no, Sofia Coppola played Sashay.
Yes.
She
yes.
played the maid. The,
I forgot about that
one. Yeah. Listen, Francis Ford Coppola calls up and goes, listen, give my daughter a part in this movie.
Well, they're all from the same film
school. They're all from the
film, yeah. Yeah, they all went to the same class. Him, Spielberg,
Coppola. Yeah, they're all buddies.
Also, Dominic West, but they actually deleted that scene out.
He's a palace guard. Dominic West was in The Wire.
The Wire, yeah.
And Chicago.
And he was Jigsaw.
In Saw?
No, Jigsaw and the Punisher movie.
Oh, the Punisher movie. Yes. That's right.
Totally over the top.
That's right. Yes. Let's see. Anything else that tickles my tits here? Nothing. Yeah, Peter Safranowicz was Darth Maul and the Battle Droid Commander, Roger. That was him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah, that's cool.
This is IMDb I'm looking at. And I think that's pretty much it in terms of the characters. I don't know if there's anybody else that, Rick McCollum was actually the Naboo courier. Was uncredited. He was a producer of the movie.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Throws himself in there, you know. So, ah, Bib Fortuna, remember him? That's Jabba's right hand man.
Yeah.
Matthew Wood played him.
I wonder if that's the same guy that played him in Jedi.
Let's see.
He looks a little young there.
Nope.
Yeah, 1972. Yeah, 72 years.
It's only a couple years older than us. So that's the movie in a nutshell. I figured that we'll probably get more in depth with the movies when it gets, because now again the storyline gets better. Leading into Attack of the Clones,
I think also too though. I mean, the story also gets smaller. I think Phantom Menace has the largest story out of all of them.
Yeah, but now you
so
get
we
the,
had more to talk about it,
right?
Story,
but now you get the when you mean small, you mean like now you
plot wise.
But now you get the story. You get the backstory of.
Yeah, but I mean it's much simpler to talk about. I mean, I think Phantom Menace is the most complicated story out of all six movies. I think because you have all the Trade Federation stuff going on. Now you got all there's so much stuff going on. We got the politics.
So when you watch it now, comparing to when you saw it like 15 years ago, whatever it was, what do you walk away from it now, being a fan, a big fan that you are? Like, do you get any more out of it? Do you get any less out of it?
I think the locations get me every time, man. Every time. To quote Arrested Development, take me to another place, take me to another land.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's what it does for me, man, all the time. I just go into another world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When I'm angrier or just life is, kicking my ass.
It's always there.
Yeah, you just watch it, man. You just go into the other place. You don't even think about it. You're just like, you know what? It's kind of like a drug, You just totally forget about everything that's going on. It's pissing you off.
Yeah, this is like my room. I'm not done with it yet, but you see my Boba Fett's up there.
Prince of Darkness.
Yeah. Fucking man. But anyway, I think once we get more into the trilogy, the prequel trilogy, we'll probably dump into more of the schematics of it, if there's anything. I mean, because there's always, like, I know when people get these DVDs, they look for Easter eggs.
Yeah.
So I guess that's all, in a way, that'll be us bringing you guys that, because there's, when I mentioned this to a couple of my fans at a wrestling show, like, they've never seen Star Wars. I got one kid in the UK, like, I never seen Star Wars before, and I didn't want to rag on him. I'm like, oh, man. Well, good. My co-host knows nothing about Star Wars, and I'm 10 years older than him. And you would think he would pick up on it, being 30 years old, over 30 years old, nothing. So that's the audience I want to get. Put them on to this. This is amazing. The body of work. George Lucas does no wrong with anything he does, but this was his coup de grace. This was his Shakespeare. This was his everything. I liked American Graffiti. I like Jaws. It was cute. But it's not Star Wars. Indiana Jones, I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, he wrote Indiana Jones.
He wrote Indiana Jones.
With Spielberg.
Yeah. Again, just...
And even, even if you're not into sci-fi or you're not into this kind of movie, stuff like that, you got to be curious about why is this such a part of our culture?
Yeah.
It's changed so much and, basically, I mean... I'm not going to do a John Lennon here and say that it's like the Bible.
But it
almost is.
Right, because it every couple of years...
It's as popular as the Bible.
Yeah, and it is, and it brings out another audience. I have my son, who's now... He'll be 8, and it's like, dude, like Legos and these books and his book clubs in school... Comic books now that he reads. I have a godson who's 3 years old. He's totally infatuated with it now. Doesn't know half of it, but he's totally into it, I'm sorry.
No.
And it was like, every couple of years it brings out another generation of fans. And I don't think any other movie will do that.
I was just going to say that. I was going to say, can you think of anything that started in 1977
that
is still relevant to this day?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing is that relevant.
Like Star Trek is not even that big.
Star Trek is big, but it's not as big as this. And you know what? And music is not even that relevant. Like, in terms of, like, well, this sounds like something that has a certain sound. That band sounds like Led Zeppelin, or that guy sounds like Iron Maiden, but, like, or that guy sounds like fucking John Lennon, but it's not, there's nothing brings it out like this.
Yep.
Nothing. So that's what we're aiming to do, and we hope that you enjoyed all of this. Am I missing anything? Did I?
No, man. It's, yeah,
if you guys want another perspective on the movie too, watch Fanboys.
Yes.
Talk about Fanboys for a minute.
Yeah, Fanboys. That movie incorporates everything that we felt leading up to Phantom Menace.
Right.
That's what I love about it, and there's some great lines in it. The great thing, one thing I really love about Fanboys is that it was made by fanboys.
Yep.
And people like Kevin Smith, George Lucas came in and said, love the movie so much. He added the special effects into the movie and the sounds.
Yep.
There's just so many people from the Hollywood that wanted to make this movie happen. Because it took like almost 3 or 4 years to come out after the guy finished filming it.
Yeah, it came out in 2000. Well, DVD came out, the Blu-ray came out in 2009.
Yeah, but it was like finished like in 2005.
Yeah.
But he just they kept adding stuff to it because people kept seeing it. They was like, yeah, he was missing something. They changed the ending or whatever. I think the original ending, they weren't going to have the kid die or something like that. Spoiler alert.
No, go see it. I remember when I first mentioned this, one of the fans of the wrestling show was like, well, Phil, have you seen Fanboys? I'm like, no, I haven't, but I will. And I watched it last week, and for the first time, I never saw it.
Yeah.
Not because I didn't want to. I just, you know. And you mentioned Kevin Smith. He's another reason why it piques my interest, because Kevin is our age, and he's now a prominent producer and actor and all sort of shit, and he's a fanboy. And I think every time he does something, it's got a Star Wars influence to it. Totally. Anything he does.
Loves Star Wars. Yeah.
Right.
He's a total Star Wars
fan. And he's now endorsed by the guys. He's endorsed by everybody. So that I think that does it. So...
Just one quick thing about Fanboys. I think the best joke in there about Phantom Menace, Seth Rogen plays a pimp.
Yes. Whoa, did you pull that out? You did.
There we go.
All right. The hell was that? Is that a piece
switch,
of the mic?
The switch, yeah.
Looks like oh, boy. All right. Lose breaking shit in here. Go ahead, dude.
So, so Seth Rogen plays a pimp, whatever. He's a Star Wars fanatic.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I can't wait for the new... It was just that one piece.
Oh, there it is. Okay. I'll fix that. That could be fixed.
And he's like, oh, I can't wait for the new movie. And he pulls off his shirt, and he's got a tattoo of Anakin and Jar Jar. And he says, these guys are going to be their shit. I thought that's the funniest joke at all.
Well, again, go see Fanboys. Yeah, if you haven't seen Phantom Menace, go watch Phantom Menace. You got a month before we hit you with the second installment of this, which would be Attack of the Clones. When you hear this, it'll be May the 4th. So if you're a fanboy, you're a true Star Wars fan, May the 4th be with you. It's a national holiday with us. I know Disney, since the Mouse took over Star Wars, they have a bunch of events going on in both California and Florida. They have different weekends dedicated to Disney to Star Wars.
Even like Amazon and JCPenney's, they're all having like sales.
Yeah, Toys R Us is doing their sale on Sunday.
Oh, okay.
So they're doing theirs the 3rd. So, you know, if you want to spend money.
Again, how Star Wars is changing the culture.
It's still in toy stores, dude.
That's crazy.
For the last 25 to 30 years, I've seen a Star Wars toy in some capacity in toy stores, in fucking... in drugstores, on the internet. Like, it's, you know, I almost bought a Tauntaun the other day, and I stopped myself.
I want the Tauntaun sleeping bag. Yeah. See that? You open it up, it's got the guts in there.
Stop. Don't get me started. Yeah, is there anything else I'm missing before we wrap this up?
No. Everybody, I mean, anybody who's listening... Everybody who's listening?
Yes.
We're going to be doing Attack of the Clones next.
Yep.
So, yeah, definitely like you're doing the wrestling thing. Maybe like, you know, if you guys want to ask questions about Star Wars. Or
yeah, well, I'm going to put, we started the Facebook page. So go to facebook.com /SW retrospective. That's the page. I think I have to make you an administrator, but you know, add people to the page, and that's just our way of interacting with you guys while we're doing this. It may lead to something else. We haven't figured that out yet, but right now you hear this on a rant. Go to rantemradio.com. As of Monday, you'll get it. And you can get it on geeksoftheindustry.com. Shout out to Chunky Larry and MSR and all those other guys. They do a bunch of stuff there, too. And I think that's going to be it. And again, leave it on the Facebook page. Lou and I are on social media every day. We'll get back to you. We'll answer all your questions. And if you want to hear something, talk about something, we're going to bring other people on, too.
Yeah, debates or anything.
Yeah, I mean, because, again, it's just opinions, and they're like assholes. Yep. Everybody has them. Some of them stink. You know, you may not agree with what we're saying, but, you know, it's just our interpretation of the greatness. So I'm going to fade out. But, yeah, man, thanks for hanging out, dude. Thanks for coming on. This has been fun. If I missed anything, if we missed anything, let us know. And maybe we'll apologize. I don't know.
No, we're assholes.
Yeah, we're assholes. We're fanboys. That's what fanboys do. So, again, we'll see you guys next month. Thanks for hanging out with us. Star Wars, a retrospective to a galaxy far, far away. Number one is in the books. Number two, Attack of the Clones, next month. And I think that's it. Lou, anything else before we go?
Nope, that's it, man. It was a great time, man. I'm ready for the next one already.
Ready for the next one. All right, you kids be safe. May the force be with you. And don't get arrested. Avoid the clap. You know, whatever. All good stuff. Good night, kids.